Hi, and welcome back to a new How Did You Make It?, the podcast in which we explore each step that has built the career path of various individuals through the discovery of their habits, passions, and interests over the last few decades. I'm Yusra, your host, and today we welcome Ousmane. In this episode, Ousmane walks you through his path and life decisions in his home country, Pakistan, how it led him to Singapore and now building a life in Ireland. During this episode, there are countless takeaways and learning from taking care of yourself, identifying a role model who can inspire you, and beyond. But also, discover how his family played a crucial role in empowering him and leading by example and showing the behavior to adopt and live by, like curiosity and troubleshooting. But also, how to find a balance between putting efforts and investing in yourself versus falling into excess in what today we can associate with burning out. So, are you ready? Let's learn from him. Hi, Ousmane, and welcome to the podcast. I'm very happy to host you today. So I'll just give you the floor and let you introduce yourself.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Yusra. I'm happy to be here. Brief introduction about me. My name is Ousmane. I am originally from Pakistan. I grew up in the city of Karachi, where I went to school and middle school and high school. I also went to university in Pakistan as well, in another city called Lahore. After which, I actually worked in another city in Pakistan called Islamabad. So I've been all over. And then after that, I've also worked in Singapore and now in Dublin, Ireland, where I work in Google as an analyst. So yeah, that's just a bit about me. And I'm sure we'll speak a lot more about certain things, and I'm excited to talk to you about them.
Thank you so much, Ousmane. I'm very much looking forward to sharing your experiences. But before that, can you share with us your definition of success?
Yeah, great question. A great first question as well, I think, to kick it off. I think for me, the definition of success has varied over the years as I've gotten older and more wiser and more experienced. I suppose when I was a bit younger in school, high school, etc., it was to get into a good university. That's what success meant to me. When I was in university, I think success just meant getting through my bachelor's degree and getting through my courses. And then towards the end of it, it was just getting a good job. But now that I've been working for almost 10 years, I think the definition of success has changed, but ever so slightly as well. I think in the early parts of my career, it was to work hard, hustle, try to grow myself, grow my career as much as possible. It was just focused heavily on that, along with my wife as well, who I met in college. But I think at this stage of my life and my career, I'm at a point where success for me is a blend of both personal and professional lives. I want to be able to do the best work I can and move ahead in my career. But at the same time, success for me also means being able to fund the lifestyle or have the experiences that I want with me, with myself and my wife. And now I have a 6-month-old son as well. So it's really now a blend of moving both these along and not really, I think, over-indexing on just one, because I think then that disrupts the balance. So right now, success for me is being able to manage my career in a way where I'm getting doing good work, learning new things, creating an impact, building a name for myself. While in my personal life, I'm trying to spend time with my wife and kid and have the experiences that we want to have together.
So how did you make it there? So let's talk about your teenage years and everything that you were doing, your habits, your interests, what kind of students you were, everything you can share with us today.
Yeah, no. Thanks for the question again. I think it's really important, like you said as well, to jump into the foundational years, I would say. And looking back now, everything seems so different and so far behind as well. But I do think there are certain things and principles or just certain behaviors that I perhaps learned during those early teenage days that stick with me today as well. And so I think the main thing that drove me was the fact that both my parents were working parents. So like my father, he worked at a company for many years as a director, but in the last maybe 10, 15 years of his career, he had his own business. I think he had a factory of some sort in different areas of industry in Pakistan. So, and sometimes what would happen, unfortunately, is things wouldn't work out. But he would never quit. He would always pivot to another industry or figure things out and try hard and work hard. And so I've always seen him have that sort of approach and mindset. And even now, actually, funnily enough, I was in Pakistan visiting my family just last month. My dad's almost 65 now, but he's still doing most of his, he's retired now, but he's doing most of his work himself. So if, for example, he needs to build a small shed, a small bird cage, he'll get the wood from the market, he'll get the tools, he'll make things himself. So very, very hands-on, but very much still hardworking and doing his own thing. My mother was a doctor. Again, she's retired as well now. But I remember her. So she used to work when we were younger as well. She'd work from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And that's because she had to pick us up from school. So I have three more siblings. So she had to pick all of us from school. And so I remember just her sending us to school in the morning, then going to her work, her clinic, and leaving that to pick us up, then picking up basically four kids, taking us home, then making us lunch and then homework and everything. So I've always seen both my parents work really, really hard. And I think that's one of the key development or foundational things that I think stuck with me and is my core right now as well.
And what kind of students were you?
In terms of what kind of student I was, honestly, I think there was two phases that I had. One was where I was a very good student and I'd kind of, you know, basically do my homework on time and do the right things basically in class. But I think towards the end of middle school, I met a few friends who I'm still friends with today, who I don't want to say were a bad influence, but this opened up a whole new other side of myself that I wasn't aware of. And it's also just one thing I do want to add here as well. You meet all sorts of friends in middle school, right? And some of them will open up certain aspects of your personality, while others will open up other aspects. So I think in middle school, when I met those friends of mine, a whole new world of experience came about. I started being interested in the same sports they were interested in. So football and these different volleyball, etc. And even into video gaming as well. So like Counter-Strike and these different games, Dota, etc. So just picked up a whole lot of different interests. And then my grades dropped a little bit, perhaps. But I was still a pretty smart kid, studious kid. My parents were heavily, heavily focused on making sure we were focused on our studies as well. So and I know this is a bit of a long answer from what you've asked, but my grandparents were very, very well educated as well from both sides. My maternal grandfather is a doctor, one of the first in the city of Hyderabad in Pakistan, which is a small city. And my mom's siblings are all doctors as well, very much focused on education. So this was a very, very core thing. So I do think I hover between good grades and medium grades, never bad. But yeah, like that was it. I was very interested in math, in this chemistry, and I think just physics. I was generally all around. I was pretty interested in what I was studying. It was just, of course, I mean, when you're in school, you also want to have fun. So there was that. But like, I didn't think any maybe social sciences or geography was boring, you know, a bit. But I think generally speaking, the rest were pretty interesting. Like math and that sort of stuff, physics was very interesting to me always. But yeah, so that was some of the stuff I was involved in.
And do you remember why you were more interested in math, physics, chemistry?
I think you're asking some questions which I never really thought of before, but great question. So I think perhaps one of the reasons I was always interested in physics, math, and this sort of stuff as well. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was pretty good at English. So just for some context as well, I went to a private school in Pakistan. And luckily enough for me, it was one of the best institutions in Pakistan, one of the oldest as well. It was set up by the British in like the 1800s or something. But I was always good at English comprehension, reading, literature. I loved reading as well. I wish I had more time to read now, but like I just loved reading. But I was always fascinated by physics and math and both sort of like chemistry as well, just because my father was a mechanical engineer. And he I think he did an MBA as his master's as well. So he had a really solid blend of knowing how things work, but also having a business mindset as well. And so I remember very early on, in our house actually, if the fridge was broken, if the TV was broken, if the AC wasn't working, if my PlayStation wasn't working, if, you know, anything of that sort, my father would actually open it up and figure out what was wrong and fix it. And so if I remember correctly as well, even early on, when I think I was 14, 15, when he was at work, sometimes I'd open up like certain electronics myself using a screwdriver. I wouldn't always put them back together because I didn't know how to. I do remember there was a time where I'd fix my own PlayStation basically, and I knew what he would do. So I'd do that. I think that's also something I picked up, and like now I kind of troubleshooting is what you call it in the modern day world, right? So I still have that sort of mindset, but I think just generally seeing him that way always made me interested in how things work. So like a weird thing to share, but if you look at my YouTube history now as well, you might find really strange things like totally random, like how does a root canal work? What happens in a root canal? You know, I'm not a dentist, but a root canal is a dental procedure that I was like, hey, how does it work? Even like how do electrical batteries work? So I have an electric vehicle. And so when I have a charger for it, and I was thinking, okay, how does this charger really work? So even though I have nothing to do within my work or anything, but it's just that I really love seeing how things work. And I guess physics is a part of it, but math also when it comes to numbers. I guess maybe that's why I was interested in it. Also, because I was good at it, others encouraged me as well. And so it was just maybe perhaps the natural thing when you're praised for something you like to do it more often as well. But actually, sorry, one more thing I missed yesterday before, and I do want to add, I think that was also a time period where I became very interested in music. So my friends in middle school, I mentioned they weren't all bad influenced, introduced me to some positive things as well. So football, sports, a lot of them. Music was a big part as well. I bought my first guitar in middle school as well. So yeah, like just one thing I wanted to add there though.
So would you say that your family played a key role in helping you developing this curious mindset?
100%. I think I genuinely believe if they didn't instill the sort of values and the hard, like the attitude and the mentality, just the hard work in me at that age, I am very sure I wouldn't be where I am today. And just to give an example as well, my sister is a dentist. She, you know, like she's in Pakistan. She has three kids. She's not practicing right now because she has three kids and she's just busy with them. But like, it was always something that all of us, like all my siblings had. Like my older brother, he worked L'Oreal, which is a cosmetic company. It's like a big company, right? So good position. My younger brother worked for one of the biggest e-commerce platforms in Pakistan. And so it was always a case of trying to push ourselves in a way where we were all very ambitious. But I think one other thing as well they did instill as well was not going to excess. Basically, ambition is great, but don't let it overcome your life, if that makes sense. You know, don't let it be the sole purpose you exist for. And so that's something that was always very important as well. I think there was a lot of family oriented values in terms of like family is important, friends are important as well, but like family is also important. Work hard. Just, I guess, I don't want to use the word traditional old school, but that is how I think most traditional old school families were. So I think that's one of the key factors I think that led me to where I am today.
Were you realizing this when you were a teenager? Do you think you learned those values and those habits and this way of thinking by seeing them acting as such, as living their values and, you know, showing you how it looked like to be determined, for example?
Yeah, 100%. I think that was key for me to develop my habits. But like you said as well, I don't think I appreciated it or understood it when I was a teenager. You know, I think I only started to understand these values when I went to university, which is another city, Lahore, like I mentioned. And that university as well, by the way, it's considered the best institution or the best university in Pakistan as well. And the program that I went to as well, and I'm sure we can speak about it a bit more, just for some context, the program was considered the most toughest undergraduate program, apart from the engineering school, obviously. But in the business and social sciences and all of that world, was considered the toughest. But like, I think that's when I went to university was when I actually realized all of these values that I had in, like, developed, I guess, or like I had seen and learned from them. But when I was a teenager and when I was in high school or middle school, I think at that time I wasn't able to appreciate it at all. At that time, I just wanted to have fun. You know, it's one of those, when you're a teenager, you're also a bit rebellious as well. So it's a bit different then. But I think looking back when I went to university, I was able to spend some time on my own and reflect on my previous years. That's when I realized, like, oh, wow, like, those were some really important things that I learned from them. So, yeah.
And looking back at your teenagers, are there any practical steps that the younger generation listening to us can take from your own experience? Were there any advice your parents were giving you, any habits they invite you to have, you and your siblings? Is there anything you can share with us that you remember from that time?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I think it's really important, like you're doing. I mean, the whole idea of the podcast as well, after when I spoke to you, was how we can inspire and help the younger generation as well. I think that's really important to focus on that. But I think when I was a bit earlier in my middle school years, I think my parents and I just had this habit that when we come home from school, we'd have lunch and then we get to our homework, you know, immediately. Because, I mean, A, it was just something that they told me to do. But B, looking back at it now, it was a great habit because you get your homework and your revision as quickly as possible out of the way, maybe an hour and a half. And then you have the rest of the evening free to maybe go out and play with your friends or, you know, watch cartoons or whatever. So I think it's really important, the concept of revision, right? And I think I would always recommend people that whatever concepts you learn in school, or whatever you don't even learn, like you think, you know, you're in school, you're not listening to half the things sometimes. I think even spending a good 15, 30 minutes at home just going through certain pages of what you did today can be a huge, huge game changer in terms of refreshing your memory. One other habit which I didn't have, but I want people, I think I'd really want younger generations to have, and something I perhaps want in my child as well, is, and this is something based on years of research, and I read it as an adult, actually, unfortunately, but which is, sleep is a big, big consolidator of information. So sleep helps you, your brain, store information and consolidate. So if you can think of it in a way like, whatever you've learned in the day, it's all scattered in your brain, but when you sleep, it gets saved effectively. And so the idea is that you need to be able to sleep enough hours during the night that is required for, I think at that age, it's maybe 8 hours is required. I'm not even sure anymore, but one thing I always recommend, if you want to, and this is just my personal advice, if you want to learn things, if you want to progress, if you want to grow, if you want to develop yourself and your skill sets, it's so important for yourself to get good sleep. I don't know if kids are going to listen to it right now, whoever's listening to this, but if you can just sleep maybe 30 minutes more or 45 minutes more at night, that's a great start. So I think that's one thing that I didn't have. I was a pretty bad sleeper, and I do regret it now. You know, I wish I could change that. So that's one thing that I'd recommend. But other habits than that was just, like, I think my parents were very strict. They just make sure we revised, we did our homework. We'd have after-school classes as well sometimes. There were some tuitions. So a big culture in Pakistan was going to tuition centers, which they basically revise concepts and help you understand and pick up things if you weren't able to in school. So just, I think the focus was heavily on revision. But at the same time, do go enjoy yourself. Like, because I think if you're heavily focused on just revision, then it might just suck the joy of everything that you're doing. I think being in high school, everything is about balance, like it is right now as well. So yeah, I think focus on the revision, but make sure you also enjoy yourself. Otherwise, you won't end up happy with either of those two things.
Okay, so three takeaways, three learnings from Usman right there. So first, you have to do your homework. You have to focus on your classes. You have to find ways to try to understand them. And it can be through after-hour classes supported by tutors, or it can be through watching YouTube videos, content online, reading books at the library, anything that you have available to you to help you understand better what you learned during the same day, during the same week. The second thing is that to make sure you save those information to better your sleep hours. Sleeping will help you remember everything you just learned. And the third element that Usman shared with us is that you have to enjoy. You have to have activities outside of all those things which help you disconnect, which help you relax and help you have a great time with your friends or people outside of your school. And talking about this, Usman, can you tell us a little bit more about what you were doing? What do you think, looking back, all those extracurricular activities taught you?
With my friends, we'd actually play twice a week football at each other's house. But also, I think with my neighborhood group of friends, because we were in the same proximity in terms of housing, we'd almost play every single day. And if we didn't play football every single day, we'd just get together and like play board games, you know, in the park. We'd just like talk, or we'd just like play cricket, or just run about, play basketball. If there was a net, someone brought a net, we'd play basketball. Someone brings a volleyball, we'd play volleyball. It was just a case of whoever brings anything. Sometimes we'd go to each other's houses and play PlayStation. So I think those early years of friendship with different groups really helps you with your mental and emotional development, but also like you learn how to foster and build relationships as well. And again, I know I'm talking about it like these are conscious things. At that time, you don't realize it, right? But I think whoever is doing it right now, I just advise to them, my advice to them is just keep going. 10 years from now, you might think, oh, that really helped me. So studies are very important, obviously, to get ahead in life as well. But having that sort of grit personality that sport or friendship teaches you, because when you're friends with someone, you will have fights, you will have arguments, you will have discussions, you will win some, you'll lose some, you'll work in a team, you'll work solo. And those sort of experiences can never come about in a school setting or like education. So I think those are so important for you to develop as a person.
Finding activities outside of your school walls is incredibly important. Life doesn't stop at school or high school. And you know what? Actually, some cities are offering activities with teenagers where they can practice different activities such as artistic ones or sports. And it will expand your view on your life and you'll get to discover what you're capable of. And to wrap up on your teenage years, do you have any advice, something you wish you knew at the time?
I'm glad you asked that, because I was going to add, I have one last point to add. And I think it's so important to have good role models when you're younger in your teenage years. And so, for example, what I mean by that is when I was basically in middle school, high school, one of my biggest role models were sports personalities, right? And what they teach you oftentimes, and now obviously you have access to social media where you can literally see exactly what these sports personalities are up to. And what you can do is be inspired by them to work hard or just have discipline in your life or just follow a certain direction. And the reason I mentioned sports personalities in particular is I think nowadays there's so many other non-sports role models as well, which is perfectly fine. But I do think that it's so important to have role models that show you the value of hard work and discipline. I think right now you have a lot of influencers which are doing great from like a monetary perspective. Like they're making money, right? On YouTube or TikTok, etc. They're very famous. They're very popular as well. But they might not inspire you in a way which allows you to push your limits. And that's something you really want to work towards if you have a role model as a teenager.
I couldn't have said it better. Through this podcast, I want to show you how hard people have been working to make it through the countless challenges they are facing and that they are not sharing. But indeed, athletes are the role models you can learn so much from, and it's so accessible. So they are showing you how early they wake up. They are showing you how demanding their training they do every day is. They are showing you their ups and downs. They are showing you their failures, their successes, what it takes and how they make it through.
And
yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, apologies for cutting you off. Having role models which can push you to your limits in a different way, like physical, emotional, mental, you know, who can kind of help you expand your horizons is probably best for you. Once you figure that out, you can go into whatever career you want. You can be a sports person. And I do think also, like, learn from their discipline, learn from their energy, learn from their positive attitude, their never give up sort of behavior. And I'm not endorsing working from like 12 hours a day. I'm not endorsing that either. I'm just saying develop a personality where you are able to push yourself in a way that's healthy enough. If that makes sense. And sorry if I cut you off there.
You're absolutely fine. So what do we mean by everything we just shared? That if you don't have a role model at home or outside, finding athletes you can follow and learn from may change your view on how much you can make it through your own challenges in high school or later in life. What athletes are doing in that is they are showing you the mindset and behaviors that can help you face those challenges to move further in your learnings, in your ambitions, in your failures, in everything that comes your way. They show you that you need to be disciplined, you need to be focused, you need to be practicing positive self-talk, and you will eventually need to wake up early, and you will eventually need to push your limits and believe in yourself. And you know what? If you need someone who looks like you, who is from the same background, someone who's from the same country, someone you can identify to, look for Olympians. How to find them? The Olympics page gathers the competing athletes. So if, like Usman, you're from Pakistan, go look for someone.
We actually have a javelin thrower who's a gold medalist or a silver medalist in the Olympics. So literally, we have someone from the Olympics. You know what's like? I know where you wanted to go move on to the next question, but it's exactly like what you said. After he won and he became popular in terms of his media presence and, you know, watching the Olympics and Asian Games, etc., there's so many Pakistanis now who are trying like javelin. Even in the remotest village, there's videos. They don't have the equipment. They're just doing it in a field, but they're just throwing, you know, like a javelin sort of stick, and they're trying it out. So I mean, that's the importance of having such figures in your own country or someone who looks like you as well.
So looking into your higher education, Usman, can you tell us about your choice? Why did you choose that university? How did you build the confidence to move to a brand new town?
Well, that university was considered the best university of Pakistan as well. And the program that I applied to was accounting and finance. And I was always good at accounting in school. So there was a subject that we had accounting. And I think the primary reason why I went for it, to be honest, was just because it was the most difficult major in the undergraduate sphere in that university from like a non-engineering perspective. So we had obviously computer engineering, electrical engineering in the university, but everything apart from that, this was supposed to be the toughest major. And I just wanted to put myself, I don't know why, but I just wanted to put myself to one of the toughest things I could do. You know, like, you know what, I'm capable and I can do it. So I'll do it. And so I applied to that major. I've never worked a day in accounting and finance apart from internships, but just kind of wanted to go through, I guess, the process of being there. But I think the first question you asked, what gave me the confidence? I think one thing that maybe perhaps helped was most of my friends were going abroad to the US, UK for university as well. I would say maybe 90% of them. I think from the remaining 10%, I would say 5% were also applying to the same university as I was applying to as well, in the other city, Lahore. And the university's name was Lahore University of Management Sciences, which is called LUMS for short. But and so I was like, you know what, they're going as well, they're applying as well, why not? But I think what gave me the confidence, and again, this is in hindsight that I look back now, I've always wanted to explore places and be in new places, and just, you know, expanding my horizon has been one of my one of my things which I never really realized until today. But don't get me wrong, I was very scared when I first moved to that city, the university. So I was staying in the hostel, you know, they had student accommodation in the university. My dad came to drop me to the other city. He was there with me for the first day. And I was so scared those two nights, the night before I went and the night when I was there alone for the first time. I'm saying alone, but like my friends were there, but I meant like with no family, because before that I was always with family. But I think every time I've moved, it's been tough. But I think by now I know, obviously, that it's helped me develop myself as a person, and the experiences that I've gained have been unparalleled. So I honestly don't know how I built the confidence and the courage, but I guess my friends moving helped. But I was very, very scared. So I think it's just something perhaps the younger listeners who are listening to right now as well should know, that it's okay. You can be scared, you know, like it's a very normal thing. I was from a very close-knit family. My sister and my older sister and brother went to university in the same city as we lived in. So they never got a chance to, you know, do that. But I did. And I think I was very nervous and scared, but it's okay. It's you learn from it and you grow from it. So I hope I answered the question.
You did. And I do want to highlight two things that you said. First, you said that you wanted to go towards the most difficult major. And the second thing you said is that you were telling yourself that you were capable. Those are strong statements. You trusted yourself. How did you build the confidence there? How can someone proceed as you did and not put barrier to themselves, limits to their decisions?
Yeah, I think honestly, I would give the credit to my parents and my family. I think they always had me, or instilled in me, the belief that I could achieve whatever I wanted to if I put in the hard work and the effort. And they always thought I was always, they always told me I was capable of doing whatever I wanted, basically. And so I think I would largely put it down to them. They gave me the confidence that I can do it. My father would always encourage me to do whatever I wanted as well. Luckily, I think, so unfortunately, I know a lot of parents, even today, especially from Asia, South Asia, I'm from Pakistan, South Asia, a lot of parents put a lot of undue pressure on children to do, or go through a certain career path, like doctors, engineers, whatever. And truth be told, when I was younger, I myself wanted to be an engineer like my dad. Like, there's literally a video of me when I was 4 years old, and I've seen it, that's how I know it, where someone's asking what do I want to be when I grow up, and I say I want to be an engineer like my dad, you know. So, but eventually I didn't end up becoming an engineer, but just goes to show that there was never any pressure. So I think it's really important to have a good support system, a good family system, where your siblings and your parents and everyone around you can support you to do what you want, and they can instill in you the belief that you can achieve those things. I think the perfect example of that as well is, and like I was always just telling myself, I can do it. I think in the end of the second year, I had some doubts, not about myself, but like just generally, like, is this something I really want to pursue or whatever, you know? And so I actually spoke to my father, and to this day, I call my father when I want to make a major life decision as well, just to get his advice. Sometimes I won't agree with what he's saying, but I'll still get his advice nonetheless. But in the end of my second sophomore year, I called him and I'm thinking of changing my major from accounting and finance. You know, like, it's just that it is tough, but I know I can manage it. But like, it's just perhaps something I'm not too fond of. Maybe I'm not sure. And so I honestly thought he would have said, you've spent 2 years, why waste a year, whatever, just go for it, finish it off. But he actually said, you know, like, if that's what you want to do, like, change it, like, figure it out, you know. You can ask the university how to change it. It's your decision, you have to live with it, so whatever you want to do. And that sort of autonomy, which was very rare, my father wouldn't give that autonomy often, it made me reflect a bit, and I realized, you know what, I'm just giving up at the first sign of a bit of difficulty, and I know I can do it, you know. This isn't rocket science. I just have to apply myself. And I'm not saying I got like 4.0 GPA which is basically the grading system throughout college. But I was a pretty decent student. I wasn't maybe at the higher end or the lower end, but like, because it was tough, to be honest. But it just made me, or gave me the belief that, you know what, I am free to decide what I want to do, and I am able to make the decisions I want to make, and I can do it. So that's just something that stuck with me. Like, even today, I always think of this example where he could have easily told me to kind of switch majors, and that would have been the end of it. But because he's always the sort of person who wouldn't want me to give up, like, you don't think about it and do what makes sense for you, which made me go back and reflect. So I don't know if that's answered the question that you're looking for, but I think that's the kind of confidence and belief that always gave me. Yeah. And indirectly, I think he was kind of coaching me. And I know you said we'll speak about my coaching element a bit later as well. And I feel like you mentioned having a loving family, right? Like a supportive family, right? I think more than that, I still look to him, which is a bit of a, I'm not saying that he's been a coach my entire life, but in a way, he's been coaching me my entire life as well, you know? And that's kind of helped me develop the mindset and personality to help do the same thing for others who don't perhaps have that sort of support. But yeah, I'm sure we can get into it a bit later.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be talking about your coaching on the side very, very soon in details. And if you don't have that ecosystem to help you think it through, asking questions and everything else, just sit with yourself. Try to ask yourself what makes sense. Do you need to push through? Do you need to continue towards that path? Or should you pursue a different path which makes more sense for you? And going back to your decision to move abroad, did you have any doubts, any concerns, or were you absolutely eager and looking forward to that move?
I honestly never doubted my decision to move. Perhaps the first two nights, like I mentioned, when I was scared, I doubted my move. I was maybe secretly wishing I just stayed home. And also the interesting thing as well is both my brothers and with the university that they went to in the home city, that's considered the second best university in Pakistan as well. So there's always a good option in terms of, even if I had to, like, they're neck to neck sort of basically. But I do think I never doubted that decision. I think it was just something that I was driven by the quality perhaps, or just, but I think I was also driven heavily by the experience and the learnings that I might have, which I wouldn't have ever had I been like, going to the university in my same city.
And how are your grades at the time? Were you 100% sure that you will get in?
Most private high schools in Pakistan have the GCSE system, which is the British system, which is the O and A levels system. I'm not sure which countries have that right now, but I think Ireland has a similar leaving cert system, junior cert system, but it's the British system. But basically, my grades there determined whether I got into the university or not. And I did have really good grades in my my GCSEs, which is what it's called. So like I had like 9 A's and 1 B out of 10 subjects, which I have to be honest, I was very surprised by myself. I think honestly, so what happened, again, just for some context, there's O levels, ordinary levels, which is, and if anyone's read Harry Potter, the book, they know that the system that's mentioned in their books has been derived from the British system, because the author is also British as well. So the ordinary level is basically 9th, 10th, and 11th grade of schooling. And your grades there kind of are what's used partially for college applications. And then the advanced level is usually 2 years. Sometimes it's 1 year. And that's basically like 12 and 13. But some, you know, some countries don't have 13 years of high school education. They have maybe just 12. But so most universities give you admission based on your O levels and your first year of advanced levels, not the second year. And so my O level grades are fantastic. 9 A's, 1 B, which is basically A was the highest. Now they have A star as well, which is the new category, but at that time it was the highest. And then my A levels first year was, I would say, pretty decent, pretty good. Not the best, but like 2 A's and 2 B's. So pretty decent. And those are the grades that I used to apply for university. And with those grades and the school that I went to, high school, Like I mentioned, it's considered the best in Pakistan. There was very little doubt. I would say anyone who had a decent level of grades from my school got into the university, because all universities are also looking for bringing certain profile of students as well from different schools. But then it was a conditional offer that I can't get any D's in my overall. So basically, when I eventually gave my advanced level second year exams, all I needed to do was avoid any D's, because they had given me a conditional offer. And so I think that year I spent, because it was one of the last years before all my friends went to college and my university and myself as well, I barely studied that year. And I ended up with a B and three C's, or like three B's and a C. So I barely made the cut. But that's also one advice I want to give to younger generation as well. Please, please, please do make sure that if you get a conditional offer from anywhere, do not take it easy. Do not get complacent. I know someone, by the way, who actually did really well in their advanced levels year one. And they were just chilling in year two like me, but they got one D. And the university I went to, they don't even require that you, they only require grades from three subjects, right? But they don't allow any student with a D. And so this person that I know of gave four subjects exams, and the fourth one was a D. So they're like, it's fine. But then the university said no. And so actually their offer was rescinded, and they had to go to a different university for 1 year, give those exams again. And then they came back, and because it's considered one of the great best universities. So I'm just saying, no, I'm not trying to scare anyone listening to this podcast, but please, please, please make sure that you don't just, you know, coast about or get complacent. Make sure you get the minimum required for any conditional offers. But just some advice I thought I'd share.
And again, this is the ambition of this podcast, to remind you that the decision and the investments you're making in yourself in high school are so important. If you decide to give it all, once you decide where you want to go and where do you want to study, what do you want to study, your grades will open the doors for you.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's so important, like, just to hammer it home, 100%. Like, my parents always said, oh, this is the most important year of your education. And I always thought, they say that every year. I'm sure it's not true. But I genuinely believe it's
true. It is.
If you don't get good enough grades in school, you won't get into a good university, more often than not. And if you don't get into a good university, more often than not, you might not be able to get the jobs that you want. Because it is a thing, it is a sad reality of the world that good school will get you into a good college, good university. I sometimes use college and university interchangeably, but I mean the same thing. But and a good university can sometimes help you land a good job. And unfortunately, very, very sad, but if you mess up early on in your school, then the whole chain kind of breaks apart. So I do want to emphasize, like, to people, like, your parents might be telling you this and you might think it's all false, but take it from someone who's, you know, seen their friends fall off. So it's really important.
Usman, you said that you chose accounting by default, kind of, or you don't have a particular attachment to that field. But what did it teach you? Do you have any takeaways from that curriculum that still is impacting your life today? Work life, personal life?
Yeah, no. So I don't think I use anything to do with accounting and finance now. I will admit, knowing a bit of finance helps me with basic concepts when it comes to literally like living my life. You know, like knowing a bit of finance is important from that perspective. When you live your life, you live in a house or apartment, whatever. I mean, like, live on your own, you have a family. Those concepts are important there. But like generally in terms of education, I don't think I use much of what I learned. But what it did teach me, and I think sometimes universities, the purpose of university, I feel like, is not just to instill in you knowledge about a certain major and some courses. It's to build a personality and build experiences to make you into a person ready for the real practical world, right? So I think accounting and finance, the major taught me that it really, honestly, like, without sugarcoating it, it taught me that if you don't work hard enough, or if you don't pull your socks up and you know, just have the right sort of mindset and attitude, you will be left behind and you might fail. And so just an example, my course was, my major was the only one in undergraduate degrees that if you missed, not even missed actually, if you were late more than 10 minutes or missed a class 4 times in the whole semester, you'll get a straight F, like a fail. So there was basically I know I said miss earlier, but like even if you were more than 10 minutes late, that's considered like a missed class. And so our major was modeled on the MBA format, which is the master's degree, right? So class participation, where you have to speak up in class, had like 20% of our, 15% of our grade. So it was just a very, very rigorous major where I had to work hard no matter what. Like, and there's so many nights I can't even tell you. And or literally my friend's room next to me, I could hear everything the whole night. They were chilling because they weren't in the major, in a different major where there was no attendance and none of this class participation stuff. And I was in the room studying. And so it was tough. Like I'll be honest, it wasn't easy. Some people who thought like me, who had the same issues as me, we became close, we supported each other, you know, you find your support group there. But just honestly, it just really gave me a very strong sense of work ethic. And like another thing I'd link it to is one of my favorite footballers who isn't very talented, but is very famous, is called Gary Neville. He's a Manchester United player, which is the club I support as a football fan. He used to always say that his mindset was always to attack the day. And so his thing was, if you for example, also, if you cut a yard in your training over the course of the whole year, you've cut 365 yards in your training, you know, and it adds up. So, and the same thing, like Kobe Bryant, for example, used to say, if you train 1% extra every single day than others, that's nothing, but over the course of the year, better than everyone else. And so I think that's kind of what accounting and finance sort of not taught me, but it led me to that direction. And so I looked to these sports personalities as, hey, like, you know what? They told me they're doing this thing in their domain. Maybe if I just work a little bit harder, I might be set apart. So that's something that I wanted to share as well.
Great point, Usman. And it's the idea of showing up every day. Everyone is struggling. Everyone struggled in the past, and a lot of people will still struggle moving forward. So again, it's about showing up every day. It's about consistency and accepting the challenge and everything that comes your way. And it's all about using it as a learning opportunity. Because yes, it's tough. It's very challenging. It's nerve-breaking or anything you can think of.
Yeah.
But don't you think it's even more challenging or tougher to not be able to choose what you want to do after your studies? You will discover it very soon, but Usman decided to not stay in finance, accounting, and he moved towards something else. Thanks to his behaviors, thanks to his work, everything led him there because he empowered himself.
Right. Great point as well. Like, it's allowed me to choose what I want to choose. As a good student, not accounting and finance, but generally overall for any major, any university, and that's something I wanted to touch upon as well, is just having different extracurriculars at university as well. Just as I was in the music society in my university, so a lot of playing music, organizing music events, just having the camaraderie, just having, you know, an organization, like a structure, there's a general secretary and everything is working through the, you know, seeing different people do different things. We had like a entrepreneurial society in our university. Like, I would always recommend people, we did a bit of voluntary work in a few schools in the city as well. I think just generally a good university student is one who does go through his education, regardless of the major, has the right mindset, but also takes part in these different experiences as well, because it builds your personality as a whole. I know that's not the question you asked, but that is the answer I wanted to give.
It's completely fine. So what can you tell us about your own experiences? What did you learn at the time? What are the takeaways you have looking back at them?
And the other aspect of the extracurriculars I mentioned, like I was in the music society, and I was a general member, and then I eventually rose through the ranks in my final year to become the general secretary of the society, which is like the president and the vice president and then myself. And at that time, we'd organize the largest music event of Pakistan. Not just in university, but just generally as well, you know. And so I think just before you get obviously in universities, you do internships and different things as well, part-time jobs, etc. But like, I think just doing this sort of work throughout the year as well kind of helps build some sort of experience, perhaps, that's the word I might use, that kind of potentially can help you when you're applying for jobs as well in the future, I think. It helps you understand structure, hierarchy, decision-making, how to go about doing certain things, which will all help you in your work life, whether it's a business or a job, whatever it is. And I think also, at the end of the day, it helps you have fun as well. Like, you know, I played music on a stage in front of 1,000 people as well. I think when you're in university, I would recommend that you immerse yourself in it.
And if you have a part-time job and you feel like you cannot find the time to join a society, sometimes you just need an hour a week. I know it seems like it can take way too much time, but think about it like this. If you give 1 hour of your time each week to a different position in different societies, you will discover what you like and don't like doing. And it will help you so much direct your next steps, your studies, and further programs you want to do or join.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of these things, like you said, taught me what I liked and didn't like. So that's really important.
Yeah. Can you tell us about your internship, your other experiences that you had during your studies?
I did an 8-week internship in PwC, which is an accounting firm, doing audit work, basically. Like, for those who don't know what audit work might be, it's basically just assessing potential frauds, to put it simply, like scams in a person's, you know, in a business's finances and stuff, you know, money. But honestly, just the attitude and the kind of work that they were doing didn't really appeal to me at all. It sounded really interesting in theory when I was studying it, but when I did it in person, I was like, hey, this doesn't really look like it's fun. And so I think it's really important to do internships, like society experiences, extracurriculars, because it will help you figure out what you like and you don't like. Because my second internship the next year was in Coca-Cola, you know, the beverage company. And in that company, I did like a 7-week stint where it was in different departments, like the sales operation, HR, and different sort of projects. So that kind of gave me a different experience and made me think, okay, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. So I think it's really important to use that university time period. Like, you have 4 years of undergraduate or 3 years or 5 years, whatever, to help you figure out a few things before you make it to the practical world, you know? So make sure you kind of maximize that time period doing things that might help you.
So wrapping up on your student life, what can you share with us on what choice did you make right after uni? What job did you decide to do and why?
So interestingly, because I was in a business major, accounting and finance, everyone was just running after the first corporate job. I was very disillusioned, and I joined actually NGO or a not-for-profit organization with the government. And it was a public health firm, which basically does, honestly, just to summarize what it does is it runs programs or like just helps people figure out health solutions for free, the underprivileged people. And it does research in terms of what medicines work, what doesn't work, what methods work for treatment, what doesn't work. So it's basically like public health research firm. And I joined as a project manager. So I was responsible for tuberculosis. Believe it or not, I was responsible for a project for tuberculosis, which is a disease which not many countries have in the world, but Pakistan does. It's a very deadly disease. And I never, like my mother is a doctor, but like I had never explored this in my life, you know. But what it did allow me actually to learn, was empathy, because we would interact with patients who are suffering from, or could potentially be a deadly disease, right? So it was scary a bit as well, but it was also very, it made me more empathetic in terms of being more privileged, etc. But also it was a very good exposure to project management, which was the work that I was doing. So figuring out how to set up a plan for a project, how to define milestones, how to just set timelines, work with limited resources and that sort of stuff. So good experience. I think a very meaningful job, where like a very fulfilling job as well in terms of social value. But yeah, that was my first job. I was very disillusioned. It also didn't pay that much money. And so eventually I had to move on because I wanted to make some money as well. But it's the sad truth. Sometimes the jobs which provide social value provide less money than other jobs. But yeah.
Yes, unfortunately, in most of the NGOs, the pay is not that great, meaning that you could face a lot of challenges. But it takes me back to what I mentioned in previous episodes, is that you can have your full-time job in another structure, or you can be an entrepreneur and volunteer your time as much as you can for any kind of missions that align with your purpose, what drives you, what those conversations are, a reminder that you don't have to put yourself in a challenging financial environment, because you need purpose. The purpose can be found beyond the doors of your work.
Yeah. And I do want to add, though, I think this is, so I'm a bit older now, obviously, and this is all the way back in 2015. I do think that nowadays, there are more and more ways where you can create social impact, like you're saying. And now I think a lot of these, whatever, NGOs, companies, whatever you call them, I think they also improved their pay structure as well. So I think in today's world, it's easier to work for these sort of places and build, that create social value and impact, but also not lose out, for example, on a good paycheck as well, which is a good, which is an important thing people consider when they want to look for a job as well. And just an example, there's like there's a few consultancies that I know, like globally, which kind of help focus on developmental projects, right? I know so many friends that work with the United Nations Development Agency as well. A lot of companies who work with like I know so many of my friends worked in consultancies and companies which help build more schools and hospitals in Pakistan. And so there's way more ways now. And I would always encourage people, I think if you can volunteer, obviously that's one thing. If you can work there for a short while, but I would always recommend someone in their career that should spend some time working for these sort of cases. It's just because it's important to give back as well.
Yeah, agreed. And if you look at it, like, let's pretend that you're an accountant. You can give them time and you can share your skills with them.
But sometimes these companies or these organizations, they need support in different ways. So you're 100% right. You can volunteer as well. But even if it's an hour a week or hour every 2 weeks, you know, it's important time to them.
So what did you do after that experience?
Yeah. So after that experience, I joined this company called Telenor Pakistan. And Telenor is a telecommunications company. Mm-hmm. That's actually a Norwegian company. So it's basically Telecom Norway, which is Telenor. It's a government telecom company in Norway, but in South Asia, so Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, and a couple of other places, they had a huge presence at that time. Not so much anymore, but at that time. The only drawback was, not drawback, but one of the things was that their head office was in a different city to one where I, so after, just for some context as well, after university, which was in Lahore, I went back and I worked in Karachi, which is my hometown, and I was at home with my family, right? But this company that I'm talking about, their head office was in another city called Islamabad, which is 2 hours by flight, and by train, like 15 hours, whatever. And so the reason I switched there, to be honest, was again, always wanted to push myself, right? And always wanted to kind of, had the belief in myself. This was considered the best employer in Pakistan for 3 or 4 years running. And so I was like, you know what? If this is considered one of the best employers in Pakistan, and if I want to join the corporate world, this is where I want to start off with, you know? And so I applied. I had interviews for one role, didn't work out, but then I had an interview for another role. It worked out. And so I actually ended up moving cities again. And I moved to Islamabad. And I'll tell you, honestly, again, when I moved, the first 2-3 nights were so tough. Because at least for university, my father came and dropped me. But for this one, I went alone. And Islamabad, the city that I'm talking about, is considered very much a dead city in terms of its night sort of life. So like 9, 10 p.m., the whole city is sleeping. Whereas the city that I'm from, Karachi, 9, 10 p.m. is when the city comes alive. The city is dead at like 2 a.m. in Karachi. So very different change for me as well. Almost wanted to just quit and take a flight back. But I think one thing I always tell everyone, the first 2-3 nights are the toughest. If you can just get through those, you'll be fine. But I joined there as a digital marketing officer. But the truth be told, just to summarize what I was doing, I was responsible for the company's website and app, mobile app. And so everything to do with the website and the app, which is basically any and analytics, how we can grow the app, get more users, get more views, get more people to use the app to, I'm sure everyone who's hearing this has a mobile phone package with their provider, whether it's Vodafone, Virgin Media, whatever. And so our goal was to bring more people into the e-commerce channel versus the traditional ways of subscribing. And just like the marketing as well, how can we improve our online marketing? And so everything was something that, like, part of the work that I was doing with a few other people, which was my first exposure to tech. But yeah, that's the reason I wanted to move. It was considered the best employer. Like, you know what? I need to do it.
You said something very interesting. So you said that first you applied, it didn't work. You applied a second time and it worked. What was your first reaction to that first rejection?
So even till today, whenever I get any rejection, the first hour or the first 30 minutes, I'm really sad and upset. But then after that, I learned to move on really quickly. I think I've just built a lot of resilience in my personality. And I think it goes back to like just some context. I had an older brother. I have an older brother, right? He would always tease me when we were younger. When we were, you know, like, when we were in, like, in our teenage years or just school, he'd always tease me. And I think I just learned to build up that resilience over the years. Also, like, rejection is from interviews, etc., is something that when it happens a few times, you realize that it's just part and parcel of the process. So the first hour or so, pretty sad. Like, you know, thought I had cleared it, but didn't work. But the second one worked. So kind of, I've always had this mindset, you know what, this is just another learning experience. If it didn't work out, I learned something new. I at least learned what kind of questions they can ask, right? I learned that I can maybe improve some of my answers. So I always now take it as a learning curve. Rejection is a part of it. And I'm going to speak more about it, I think, with some of the other jobs as well. Because I do believe that those who try will have more rejections than acceptances. But those who don't try will never know what they can achieve, right? So I think it's just that rejection is a part of the whole trying thing and succeeding thing.
So two takeaways from what Usman just shared with us. First, you have to move on, and you have to move on fast. It was not meant for you. You cannot just stay and blame the situation. You're just wasting your time. And the second thing is that this is a learning experience. Maybe you did not structure your question well. Maybe something was missing for the person to understand how a great fit you are. But it's fine. But it's fine. You're learning. Take notes from the question you were asked, from your answers, and think about how you can improve them before your next interview for your next job.
Yeah, 100%. And if I can point the listeners to something that really, really resonates with me, Roger Federer, who is a tennis, legendary tennis player, right? He gave a commencement speech a few years ago. Okay. I'd recommend people go watch it. He speaks about very similar concepts of how he lost, I think, 40% of the points in his career, but he won 60-70% of the matches, right? And the whole idea is that you'll have to learn to move on quickly from losses or points loss or rejections, because the next thing matters then, you know? So I recommend folks listen to that. It's really, really inspiring. Again, goes back to the importance of having these sort of sports personalities as a role model. That's been a big part of my life. I do think that these sort of personalities can have a very positive impact.
Thank you for sharing. I'm sure there are countless learning from that speech. And it's the perfect example. He has to move to the next set and the next set and the next set. And if you lose continuously, or if you have to step up your game, you don't have time. You don't have time to waste, to blame the situation, to pity yourself for all of this. You have to process it, obviously. But you have to go back for more.
Yeah. There's no time to dwell on any point lost.
And you're telling me that, but we know how difficult it is to just move on and trying to process after you put so much work on the preparation, on getting to understand the expectation of the interview, getting to understand what the goal of the company was, etc., etc. I know, we both know how much work you put into this. But we also know that as soon as you process it, you have to go to the next one. Because if you didn't get that job, it doesn't reflect on any of your capacities. It reflects on probably your preparation, or just that the interviewer was not looking for someone with that set of skills at that time, but maybe later on. Usman, can you tell us about your next experience? You joined Careem, right?
Yep, that's correct. And so Careem, actually, same reason I moved to Careem as well. Careem, again, for those who don't know, is a ride-hailing company from the Middle East, which was recently acquired by Uber like a couple of years ago. And it's the first unicorn startup, which means it's the first billion-dollar startup from the Middle East, which is a big thing, right? But Careem was massive in Pakistan. It was the first big, the first e-commerce platform, apart from like maybe food delivery services, to really change or disrupt the Pakistani market, right? And so, interestingly enough, even though Careem was more present longer in some Arab countries and the Middle East before, North African countries before, the highest number of rides were in Pakistan, right? And so it had taken Pakistan by storm, by really literally, and it opened up so much possibilities for women who found it unsafe to travel and that sort of stuff. But like, I wanted to test myself in a completely new environment, a startup environment, and I wanted to be a part of the Careem journey, which is basically like revolutionizing Pakistan's transport side. So that was literally my primary motivation. You know, like, you know what? Careem is getting bigger and bigger. It's impacting Pakistanis more and more. I need to be a part of this journey and push myself. That's how I joined Careem. I joined Careem as a growth hacker, digital marketing expert, demand growth person. So just to summarize what work that was, my job was to increase the revenue, to increase the number of rides, and make sure our marketing is done in a way that attracts more customers. For the app, obviously, and for the ride. So just generally seeing the whole process in the app and marketing, and how we can kind of find the right balance between the available riders and the available drivers, for example. So a lot of that stuff. It was a startup. I was only there 3 months, but it felt like a year, because I probably worked like 12 hours every day. And they almost worked 7 days a week. Luckily for me, I was very strict on working 7 days a week. I said, you know what, there's no way I'm working on the seventh day. And that was a bit of an issue, but like I held my boundaries. But But yeah, that was Kareem. That was Kareem for me.
Oh, that sounds quite intense. So you decided to move companies, right?
Yeah, so actually I wasn't planning on it as such, but then I actually got a call from Meta/Facebook. It was known as Facebook at the time. And that was for a role in Singapore. And I was in Karachi at this point. So I had actually come back from Islamabad to Karachi again. I had moved cities. After Telnor, I came to Kareem. So Kareem was in Karachi. So yet another city I moved in a year's time as well, a year and a half. And I was only literally in Karachi for 4 months. And now I'd said to myself, I'm not going to move again. I had moved way too much from Karachi to Lahore for university. And every summer, packing up everything and coming back, because our student accommodation would change every year. So every summer, I had to pack up everything, come back to Karachi, and take everything back for the new semester. Then I came, after university, I came back to Karachi for my first job. Then I went to Islamabad for my Telnor job. Then I came to Karachi for this job. And so when I come back to Kareem, like, you know what, that's it. I'm done. I'm going to move. But then Facebook obviously called from Singapore. At that time, I had no confidence. This was the first time in my life where I didn't have much confidence things will succeed, by the way. Because it was very unheard of at that time for a Pakistani to be hired directly from Pakistan with no foreign education. I had no foreign education, right? It was just Pakistan. Or no foreign experience. I'd only ever worked in Pakistan. And so it was very, very, very unheard of for a Pakistani to get the job like that. And so even though I had low confidence, I remember a conversation my dad and I had at the dinner table where we were like, let's just go ahead with the process. You know, it'll never work out, but I learned something new. But it did work out, obviously. And so I did move to Facebook and I moved to Singapore in 2017. The first night then was also difficult, even though I had moved to a new... it was the most nervous I'd also been because it was a new country altogether. But Singapore is amazing. Facebook as a company was amazing. The kind of support they provided me was amazing. So it made it much easier. If you want to know more about the role, I was there for 4.5 years. Mm. I was in Singapore for 3 years. And then I moved to Dublin, Ireland, which is another country change for me. But I was still with Facebook in Dublin as well. But yeah, I did so much work, different type of thing. Like I did vendor management. I did like data analyst work. I did like program management work. I did a lot of mentorship, strategy work, process optimization, process creation, a lot of learning. I don't think I've ever learned more than I did in that time period as well.
After changing role and scope within that company, you moved to another tech company.
So right now I'm actually at Google. And so I mentioned I switched countries from Singapore to Dublin. I switched during COVID. So I moved to Dublin in 2020 with Facebook. So, and interestingly enough, at that time, by the way, I had changed roles as well. So I joined a new role in Dublin. And so I remember speaking to someone at that time who said there's three things you should never do together. You should never change city or country together. You should never change your role. And you should never change... I can't remember the third one actually, but like it's skipped. I'm having trouble remembering that. But like the idea was keep constant or some things constant. So not everything gets you at the same time. And so I remember I changed countries and I changed jobs and like in the same company into covering your team. And it was so challenging moving to Dublin with Meta as a, but obviously we got through it. But I was in Dublin with Meta or Facebook for 1.5 years. And then I joined Google in 2022. And so I'm actually at Google right now. And my role right now is like a program manager in the regulations space. So there's this regulation called the DSA, which is the Digital Services Act in the European Union. And there's obviously different regulations in the world, like there's the UK Online Safety Act, Australian regulations. So my team basically helps Google. My team helps other teams prepare for these regulations to make sure they're following all the rules and regulations, that they have the right processes in place or the right ways to showcase compliance, because if you don't follow the regulation, it's obviously a very, very major compliance issue. It'll be fines, it'll be legal cases, etc. So like I work in this right now, so that's the kind of work that I'm doing. And if you,
Usman, can you tell us why you chose those roles? What were your drivers to move from one company to another, from one area to another?
I think you have 10 years of figuring out what kind of work you like and the things you want to do. And so I feel like I've spent these last 10 years, almost 10 years, figuring out what things I like to do and what I'm good at, what I enjoy doing, but also at the same time, pushing myself in ways that I know is possible, perhaps in these first 10, 12, 13 years of my career. Because beyond that, you start building a specialized route more often than not, right? And so I think for me, the big driver has been just pushing myself, learning, growing, trying different things as well. And just from digital marketing to like, you know, like that from to this, it was always a case of, can I do more or can I do something different? And what do I enjoy doing? So even though right now, perhaps I do still loved my digital marketing experience and I really enjoyed that. Now I know maybe I want to build my career in something that's a bit different, you know. So sometimes it's a case of building your career and your skill set in something that you love to do. Sometimes it's something you built in something you like to do. So I mean, in life, unfortunately, you don't always get to do what you love to do, but you also have the option sometimes, like you said, to choose from, because you've built that foundation, to choose between different things you might like doing. So.
And now, can you tell us a little bit more about your passion projects that you're doing on the side? So you're developing some mentoring and coaching. Can you tell us more about it?
Thank you. So like I said, like right now, actually, I'm, apart from my work at Google, I'm trying to explore a new path for myself on the sides, which is in my core work, which is mentoring and career coaching and mentoring. And so I think it primarily is driven from the fact that I had one or two coaches and mentors throughout my life. I think the first one being my parents, particularly my dad from like a career perspective, but generally from a coaching perspective, both my parents as well. Like I mentioned before, even now I give him a call to ask him certain things, right? Just get his advice on certain things, and just even university as well. He's the first person I called when I wanted to maybe switch majors, and he gave me advice there as well. But being in university as well, and even my jobs as well, I realized that there's a lack of options for the younger generation to be able to speak to someone who's perhaps relatable, who's gone through the journey or gone through the hard work. And when you don't have anyone to take advice from or mentorship or coaching from, sometimes, not always, you can end up making decisions that aren't very beneficial for you. Like I said, not always, sometimes. But if you have that person in your career or your early university days as well, they can guide you in a more meaningful way and maybe make your choices better for the future. And so I don't think I had that much that sort of coach apart from my parents and then one manager that I had who's been really fantastic, one or two managers. But I realized it's so much more important for people to get like a consistent guidance in these sort of elements. So that's the kind of gap that I wanted to focus on, particularly in Pakistan. But I know for a fact that in a lot of countries which are coming up in the world, this is a key gap. And so just for some context as well, I worked with 2-3 people directly in one-on-one capacity, helping them with maybe the career search, career journey, helping them kind of land the jobs they want. Right now, I'm working with a group of young professionals as well, in a group coaching format where I'm trying to guide them and work with them. I've also collaborated with collaborated with my university labs, which we have my alma mater, given 2 sessions there as well to 100 plus audiences. I'm now trying to expand that. I'm actually in touch with 5 more universities in Pakistan. I've also recently, and that's fun, by the way, like I know where people might be listening to this podcast for the first time and thinking, this is the first time I've spoken, but we've been speaking for a while now about, you know, the ideas that your stress had and just generally. And one of the things I'm exploring now as well is speaking at schools as well, high schools. Because I feel like you said before as well, a lot of the foundation starts very early. I'm not saying you look for a job that early, but what happens is sometimes you build that foundation and there's certain ideas that you have about your career or certain myths that you might have that or certain inspiration that you might need that might be possible at the school level as well, high school level. So right now I'm actually trying to collaborate with high schools in Pakistan, trying to go speak with the students there, have some virtual sessions and maybe in-person sessions. But yeah, that's the focus that I've been having, kind of help or guide more people and more students, more early young professionals as well. Just in a way where if they have certain ambitions, or even if they're so early in their journey in school where they don't have any ambition because they're just so young, I'm trying to instill that sort of ambition in them as well. But I don't know if anyone's interested, but if your school or university or you might be interested, feel free to go to my LinkedIn and go to, you know, send me a request, view my services there. I'd love to expand and speak with schools all over the world if I can, you know, wherever there's a need. But yeah, that's what I've been doing.
I will share Usman's contacts within the description of this podcast and within social media so that you can find and reach out to him. Mentors and coaches can change your path, making you understand your capabilities, making you understand what's out there, the opportunities that are there, and how it could be an opportunity for you. So if you're just slightly curious, please don't hesitate to reach out to Usman.
Thank you.
You shared countless advice, but do you have any last advice for our listeners?
No, great conversation as well. Thank you so much. I think, like you mentioned, I've been throwing out advice in the whole session, the whole podcast, but I think one last advice that I want to give to the listeners is trust yourself, have the belief in yourself. If unfortunately no one else has the confidence in you, you should trust yourself. I genuinely believe every one of us has that sort of capacity or that sort of talent or attitude. And I'm not saying everyone has to have the same exact sort of route in their career or mindset, but whatever it is that you're interested in. I have a friend who's a chef, right? And that's they found their calling. But I'm just saying that you need to be able to have that self-belief. But self-belief also does not mean that you have you build an ego, you know. Self-belief is more of a case where you try and push yourself as much as you can in certain areas that you're interested in and learning new things. But at the same time, you are able to reflect on your strengths and weaknesses and know what's good for you, what's bad for you. And so I think anyone's listening right now, you are good enough. You know, you have the capabilities, you have the you can have the drive within you. Just learn to understand what's good for you, bad for you, what your strengths and weaknesses are. And if no one's believing in you, believe in yourself. So that's my last advice to people.
You are able to make things happen for yourself. Thank you so much, Usman. Thank you for all the advice you shared with us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us today. And don't forget to share your feedback wherever you can and follow us wherever you can as well. See you next week.